Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us in 1 hour. We'll then hear from Mike Vrabel at the podium. We'll also hear from Will Levis. I was a little bit surprised to see his name on the press conference list today. Of course, the news yesterday coming out from Jeremy Fowler that Will Levis is dealing with a high ankle sprain, as we talked about yesterday. Probably a fair assumption that Will Levis will be out on Sunday, but no official word from the Titans yet. So we'll hear from Mike Vrabel and Will Levis next hour. Willie D, D-Mace, how we doing? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. Is it Wednesday? Good Lord. It seemed like, I don't know why I thought this morning was like Thursday. I was getting really excited. I'm excited just to be up and moving around, but I got really excited for a second there.
Ready
I'm
for
like,
the
it's
weekend?
Thursday,
ready man. For Christmas?
Goodness, my son come home today? And I was like, nope, he comes home tomorrow. So, yeah, so, but
we'll
great day.
Good things to look forward to.
Absolutely. So, great day. Unfortunately, Willie, the streak had to end yesterday.
Yeah, that was a bummer. Just kind of a game where I think the word that Andrew Burnett used was just focused. They just didn't. They weren't locked in, and you have to be to play Vancouver these days because Vancouver's had everything rolling in the right direction. So, kind of a tough night. I know we're going to talk about it, but yeah, you got to stay positive, moving forward, getting closer to Christmas here. So,
just win one before Christmas, so we can go into the Christmas holiday on an upbeat.
Well, that is another thing that the coach. So Andrew Burnett is one of the – he's got a little Nick Saban, and he's always on task. He's always like, hey, I know whether the last game went great, he's like, okay, but, you know how Coach Saban is like, the other team's good. You know, but so one of the things he's emphasizing now is you got the dad's trip. You got family coming into town for the holidays. You got your – you know, a lot of the guys have young kids. Got to get the Christmas shopping done, all of the little things. He said that you've got to remain – locked in because these are important games, right? So you can't just coast to the holiday break. And sure enough, I think there was just a little bit of they weren't tied together and as connected as they have been. And it was a weird game because they weren't dominated at all. I didn't think Vancouver just came in with a sledgehammer or anything. But every time there was a letdown, it was like boom, boom. Not one went in, but two went in. They gave up two goals twice in less than a minute, and that was just so deflating. So deflating.
And nothing, I think, can take away the energy in a team quite like that when it's you barely even catch your breath and are able to kind of get back and get back focused, then there's another puck in the net. So the Predators fall to the Vancouver Canucks at home 5-2 last night, so they snapped that four-game winning streak. You're still 13-4-0 in your last 17. But that's what I wanted to break down today because we know that this Predators team isn't the most stacked roster in the NHL. This is not a Stanley Cup contending Nashville Predators team. So looking at that game last night, the Vancouver Canucks are a team that we talked about yesterday that is overachieved based off of preseason expectations. But was last night maybe a little bit revealing of the divide between the Predators and some of the top teams in the National Hockey League? Or was last night really just due to the Predators shooting themselves in the foot? Was last night due to the Predators just not being, you know, at 100%?
It's a good question because I think you can make the argument that Vancouver has also overachieved based on before the season started. I think if you look at the predictions, I think you would throw Vancouver and Nashville into the bucket of teams in the middle that we're not quite really sure what they're going to be over 82 games. And Vancouver has really been sort of the talk of the West so far. So it's weird because they've played Vancouver three times, and I don't think they felt good about how things went in any of the three, and they got beat in all three. But I do think it's a reminder that where they are, it's not a loaded roster, and they have to have the attention to detail to be effective. And that's what they have found ways to win by doing that, and you see what it looks like when there's a little bit of letdown there. Also, if we're going to praise UC Soros for games where he is saving a lot of goals above expected, mm-hmm. last night just wasn't one of those nights. He wasn't able to erase mistakes. Like, you can have a play in a game as a defenseman or even a forward. We're like, man, I just really screwed up. I lost my man. He got a wide open shot. And nobody remembers it at the end of the game except for, hey, Soros just made a great save. Hey, thanks, Juice. But last night it seemed like every time there was a little breakdown or a little opening, it went in the back of the net. And so expected goals at the end of the game, according to Sport Logic, and other people may have different ones, but it was only 3 goals. And Juice gave up 5, mm-hmm. which is unlike him.
Yeah.
Unlike him at all. So I think he showed – you don't see him show frustration much, but if you really looked, he got really ticked off. That 5th one went in, he was like, man, I can't believe that just happened. Because he hasn't been giving up goals like that. He's been absolutely going the other way, just been stealing goals. So hopefully he'll be able to bounce back from that. So when you couple not his best night with not great attention to detail, you get beat 5-2.
Well, I mean, Lazan said they were flat. And then Coach Bruno said, listen, it was just too many mental errors.
Yep.
And, you know, you wonder sometimes how long a team, especially a team that this is a good team, but it's still a team that's figuring everything out. Even though they've, you know, went 13-4 over their last 17, they're still figuring things out. They're still getting better. They're going to have their setbacks. But when you go into a situation like this and you play all these games, you're going to have a letdown. You're going to have a day where you just come out flat. You don't intend to come out flat as a player, but it just happens. And then it starts to snowball. One leads to the other. And then, you know, at the end of the game, you look back and say, man, look at all these opportunities we missed. Or look at all these opportunities that we gave the other team. It was nothing that – they're a good team, but it's nothing that they necessarily did. It was everything that we didn't do. Had we come out with a little bit more energy, you know, maybe the score would have been different. I'm not saying we would have won, but it wouldn't have looked like this. At one point, it was 2-1, and then all of a sudden, it just snowballs.
And that was probably the biggest play of the game. They're down 2-0. They had those back-to-back goals late in the first. So all of a sudden, a very even game. It's a very even game, and 2 goals are scored in, what, 31 seconds? I think we did the math on that.
I think there's 31 for the first 2 and then maybe 46 for the second 2.
Right.
Crazy.
It was crazy.
4 goals in less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, and the second one was a bummer, too. It was like just a broken play and a play. The puck bounces one way, and I'm sure Tyson Barrie's sitting there going, I don't know how that happened. Like he had it, and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, it's right in front of the net. And a guy that hadn't scored all year puts one in there. It was just one of those nights. But they fight really hard in the second period. Mm-hmm. They're playing pretty well. They're taking the game to them.
It's a good second period.
And they break through and score, and you're like, okay, now we have a game. It's 2-1. Let's see what happens now. And the very next play is one of those plays that I think Lazan's talking about.
Uh-huh.
It's a face-off after a TV timeout. Vancouver wins it. They run the set play. And there's just all kinds, I'm sure when they go back to the tape, all kinds of little things where you say, well, could this guy have done a little bit better job taking his man here? Or could they have done a better job doing this over here? And then a lot of nights I think Soros is going to react and find a way to make that stop. But they score, and it's just a total momentum killer. And then 46 seconds later, here comes another one, and it's just double trouble. And that was just lights out at that point. It was just one of those things. But it just shows you how quick a hockey game can turn.
And we talk a lot about how, you know, you're really lucky that you have UC Soros because he can save games for you like that. I think last night kind of exposed what life looks like when UC Soros is not, you know, goaltending on his head. He's not skating on his head when he's not saving every single thing that comes into the net. And it wasn't without trying. And there were several times last night when UC Soros is like laying on his back trying to, you know, get his left foot to stop the puck from going into the net. It wasn't for lack of trying. It was just one of those nights. And Jeremy Lauzon was asked about it. Like, hey, he said basically, we can't expect UC Soros to save us every single night, that we have to be better in front of him. This was Jeremy Lauzon.
Ideally, what would you guys like to do different in front of UC, maybe in a game like this?
Yeah, I think we got to be better for him. we knew they were a good team. And they had a lot of offensive power, and we kind of let them down a little bit. So I think we got to bear down and get. I think we weren't ready for that game. And we let them have an easy game.
And I think that's what you saw, and maybe it's something that gets overseen or overlooked, rather, because UC Soros is able to keep you in so many games. And when you win, it's like, okay, great. And then you look at a game like that when you give up five goals, and it maybe exposes some weaknesses that you might have on the defensive side.
Yeah, I think that's what a good defenseman does, right? You put it on yourself, and you say, hey, we've got to do better. You know, let's try to let's make his job a little bit easier. Let's not put it all on him. So I think there's a blend of that. And that it always stinks, too, when you're playing in front. It was a great crowd last night. They really came out. And the spotlight's on you. And to have a game where you lose in lopsided fashion, I know, stings a little bit. And so I think that was I love that mentality. You're like, man, if you're going to come here and win in our building, I want you to say, man, that was tough. That's a tough place to play.
Right.
But they took the crowd out of it pretty early, and that's where you heard Jeremy Lauzon say, you know, I hate when somebody comes in here and wins easily like that. You know, that's a tough feeling thing as a competitor.
Yeah, you don't want them to come into your house and feel as if it's a cakewalk. You know, you want to put to – if you don't win a game, you at least want to, you know, make it truly competitive, and you want to have some pushback to what they're doing. And, you know, they had some, but it just wasn't enough. Players know, even though, you know, it may look one way to the crowd or someone else, players know, you know, if things are flowing the way they're supposed to flow, if the energy levels are up, you know that the minute you hit the ice. You know that in the locker room. And I'm sure that, you know, they get out there on the ice and you're just not feeling it. For whatever reason, you're just not feeling it. But you try to work your way through it. And, you know, a situation like that, what typically happens is you're trying to work your way through it. All of a sudden, a team jumps up on you. And then it's like, uh-oh, here we go. You know, and then you can't. It's not like you can flick a light, you know, a light switch on. You can't.
Right.
You know, it's just like, okay, let's try to find something that we can, you know, generate to get some point score, or, you know, do it on the defensive end. And a lot of times that lead to offensive score. So you try your best to try to rein the game in. But a lot of times when you're flat, you're just flat. And it's not much the coach can say.
And the harder
or
you
do.
Try,
yeah.
It seems like the worse it gets.
Exactly.
It was one of those nights. It was weird, too. If you look at the scoring chances, it's not like they gave up. They gave up five goals, but it's not like they gave up a ton of scoring chances. Mm-hmm. They weren't dominated in that fashion.
And they weren't outshot by a crazy margin.
Not at all. But I think it illustrates, too, one of the issues that I heard Barry Trotz talking about in his weekly conversation with Jarrett is this: the way the team is designed right now, for them to, it's not a team that when if they do get down 3-1 or three goals, that is just going to snap their fingers and just rev it up every night and be able to come back offensively. They had trouble generating offense last night. They weren't able to complete plays with good scoring chances, really make the other goalie work until it was, you know, a 3-4 goal deficit at the end there. So that was something I heard Barry Trotz talk about before this game. But I was thinking about that as the game was going on. And so let's take, for example, Cody Glass scored at the very end of the game. May not seem like a big deal, but that's a guy that was providing that secondary scoring. I think, Jared, the way you put it was like, if I'm Santa Claus, what could I get you for Christmas that would really help? And Barry Trotz's answer was, if I could get a little more consistent scoring, maybe on the second line, right? You can't argue with anything that the third and the fourth line has given this team. They've been great. Colton Sisson's had a really good year. Yakov Trenin has been chipping in. Even guys like McCarron and Cole Smith are pulling their weight. But the second line, Tommy Novak has gotten hurt. He hasn't picked it back up since he's come back yet. Cody Glass got his first goal of the year. That was his 14th game. I think he's only got 2 points. Think about how great Novak and Glass were playing at the end of the year. And then you've got Evangelista and Parson and guys like that who are still They haven't made a huge leap. Mm-hmm. They're making slow progress. But I think that's what Barry Trotz is looking at is, you know, okay, am I going to get enough from that group so this team can sustain success this year, right? I think down the road, he likes what's going on in Milwaukee, said as much yesterday. And he still likes all these young players, big picture. But that's the challenge of every season. Like, you're in the trenches right now, and you're looking around. And I'm hoping that just maybe that goal from Glass will get him going a little bit. That mental thing. You look on the score sheet, and you don't have a, as Andrew Burnett calls it, a donut there, right? Now you got a one there. Okay, now I'm going a little bit. So you never know. Because there's more to his game, right? He knows he's better than that. The team knows he's better. And he's had to sort of restart his season a couple times because he's gotten hurt twice for a significant period of time.
Another thing that I've noticed, you know, with the loss last night, kind of looking back at the last few losses for the Nashville Predators, and the Predators fall to the Vancouver Canucks 5-2 last night, three out of their last four losses. Now, the positive side of that is, got to go back 3 or 4 weeks to find four losses. So let's look at that through a glass half full perspective.
Basically a month, yeah.
Right. But looking at three of their last four losses, 5-2 last night against the Canucks, 4-0 in Toronto. You had the 4-3 loss in New York. It was a close game. 6-1 against the Wild. And three out of the four of those losses, those are blowout losses. What is that a weird coincidence?
Is
that
feast just or famine?
We got nothing left in the tank in those kind of games?
Yeah, because they've literally won every other game. I mean, they're 13-4. That is odd. I was thinking about that. They have had some games where when it goes bad, it's gone really bad. Like UC Saros is 10-2 in his last 12 starts, but in the two losses, he's been pulled. In both of them. I guess you take that, right?
Yeah,
if you can go 10-2 out of every 12, I'll take the two bad ones, I guess. You know, I don't know the question is that, does that mean anything going forward? Is that something that they're looking at saying what? But I just think it maybe illustrates that if you don't bring it in this league, and Mike Vrabel says this all the time on the football side, if you don't bring it, it almost doesn't matter who you're playing.
Right.
Right? If you're going to get beat.
Well, I say every game in these leagues, because you look at the schedules and you say, well, this is an easy, you know, week or easy month. No, every game you go out there and play is going to be a hard game because it's – even with teams that are not as good, it's not about them. It's about you. It's about what you do. And, you know, that's why I don't understand – I can't understand the psyche of a hockey player, basketball player, or baseball player because they play so many games. Mm-hmm. For us, it's we play a game, then we get a whole week off to get ourselves mentally right. And even in that, sometimes we come out flat on a Sunday. Just think you're playing, you know, consecutive games over and over again, night on, night off, night on, night off. And how does it hit you at certain points in the season? That's why you look at the scores and it's like, okay, they're winning. All of a sudden, the losses are not just losses, they're blowouts in a sense.
Yeah.
That's because how long can you hold on to that? You know, can you hold on to it for four games? Can you hold on to five? How long can you hold on to that thing that keeps you winning? You can only hold on to it for so long because you're playing so many games. So when you see losses like this or losses that they had that were, you know, basically lopsided, do you look at it from the standpoint of this team isn't there yet, or do you look at it from the standpoint of it's just a long season and things like this are going to happen?
I think that's where a good leadership group, and I heard Roman Josi talking with Chase about this along with Joe. They had a good conversation this morning. You have to keep that level head, and that's what your focus is. Let's put that behind us. Let's learn from it, and the next game is tomorrow. We've got to get back on it. I had laughed at this, and I was thinking, here's the difference between football and baseball, basketball, hockey, where you're playing so many more games. That Hard Knocks, and I was watching just out of curiosity because it was the Titans game, and the Dolphins brought up one of the assistant coaches. I didn't even know who it was. And he gives this real rah-rah speech. He had a quote. It was great motivational speaking. Mm-hmm. But I was like, in hockey and baseball, you don't have time to bring that guy up there. I'm sure the guy spent like a good hour putting that together. And the head coach is like, all right, you got your 5 minutes here. I want you to talk to the team. Mm-hmm. He knows the camera's on him. He knows he's on HBO, and mm-hmm. he wants to. And he did a great job with delivering it. You know, I was like, but that's just not hockey and baseball and basketball, because it's just on to the next one. You can't. You don't spend a week getting ready for that game like you do football. It's a different mentality.
Want to get into some of your thoughts, reactions from the Preds game last night. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Cam is on the line with the Preds thought. What's up, Cam?
Yeah, so, you know, I was listening to the game last night on the radio at work, and I really wasn't that disappointed. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm disappointed, but it kind of – I was just thinking about the Lakers, and, you know, the Lakers just won the in-game tournament or the in-season tournament, but then turned around and got spanked by the Spurs. And the Spurs had they were in contention for like one of the worst records in NBA history.
Yeah, the Spurs stink.
Exactly, and you know, I just think it you know, it's just part of the season. I mean, it, like D-Mace just said, 82 games is. I mean, I go to work 5 days a week, and I have days where I'm like, man, I ain't gonna do it today. I'm just not gonna do it today. And you know, you know, I just feel like it. I didn't think any differently about the team, about that game last night. I mean, you just have off nights, you just have bad games, and, you know, I'm still happy where the team is, and I think that they're still a really, really good team. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for your call, Cam. I think our boss is listening, so I'm not going to say that I can relate to not bringing my A game 5 days a week.
But gotta bring it.
Suit is ever present.
Right, exactly. Suit's listening.
You saying you're sloughing on us?
Yeah. The suit is watching. To the point of, you don't feel different about this team. You shouldn't feel different about this team. I don't think that one game should completely shift your perspective of this game, or this team, rather, one way or another. But it's looking at some trends, and it's looking at it like, look, you know, hey, sometimes you're not going to have your best. Sometimes your goaltender, who's able to steal games for you, isn't able to steal a game for you. Mm-hmm. But speaking of the goaltender, he was pulled in the third period. Did you agree with that decision?
I mean, I think, and if you let me know if you feel this way, Willie. Sometimes I think it's not necessarily, you know, yes, you're gonna pull him because of his play, but sometimes you just want to pull him out of there so he can kind of watch the game, you know, and sort of think about what happened in the game and just go on the sideline, reflect, calm down, do what you need to do. We're gonna bring this other guy in here. You know, it's a long season. We're not going to, you know, once we go back to the film, if we even have time to watch it, we might watch excerpts of the film. You're gonna see that it wasn't probably as bad as you thought it was. So let's just pull you to the side, let you rest, let the other guy, Lincoln, and come in and get the job. Because right now, we're at a point where we're not going to win the game.
You're not going to win this game. Yeah.
So I'm not too, you know, worried about the goalie being, you know, pulled. It happens.
Yeah, I think it was just that kind of night. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's just a feeling that I think a lot of people who watch every night, when that goal goes in, mm-hmm. there's a lot of different reasons you do it. It's not all, hey, Saros doesn't have it tonight, let's mm-hmm. get him out of there. It's right. a little bit of, hey, it's not his night, but also it's a little shot it's a shot to the bench. Mm-hmm. It's, hey, you know, we're better than this. We don't lose 5-1. What's going on here?
Right.
You know, I want everybody to feel it. We're taking juice out of the game. And it's also, you lose the battle to win the war, mm-hmm. right? You take him out. Let's get Lankin in some work, and let's now start kind of looking ahead to to Thursday. But there's, especially when you do it in the third period. If it's in the first period, I think a lot of times that's the shock wave where you're trying to just shake it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe get everybody to change the energy, the feeling. That's why sometimes guys drop the gloves and
fighting,
to try to just change the energy, change the whole feeling around the game. You know, hockey's a game like that where that has been a time-tested thing. And that was an interesting thing. That was an interesting thing that happened at the end of the first period. Uh-huh. Jeremy Lauzon just blows a guy up totally legally, a guy about half his size. Mm-hmm. And so Lauzon is just – he's been really phenomenal in how he's ending plays along the boards. He just crushed a guy, Connor Garland. And – his line mate comes in to sort of defend him, mm-hmm. and Lozano's like, what do you mean? This was a totally legal hit. I'm allowed to hit people. Like, I'm not fighting. And Dakota Joshua wanted to fight him. This is how I saw it. I haven't talked to the guys after it. But then Michael McCarron sees that. Says, oh, you want to fight somebody? I'll fight you. Mm-hmm. And then Joshua said, oh, no. I'm not going to fight you. And so McCarron gets a penalty because he sort of goes after him. Mm-hmm. And so they gave him an unsportsmanlike. And then he just lost his mind. And I don't know exactly what he said to the official, but he got thrown out of the game. So he must have said, as we say, the magic words. Yeah. Some of the magic words. Said, I'm not sure which ones.
He said those words that your grandmama make you eat soap for.
Something to that effect,
Well, Willie,
but then they lost him. They lost him for the rest of the game. That didn't help the rhythm of the situation.
Yeah. You're headed to Philadelphia.
We are. The city of brotherly love. I'm about to get on the plane with all the dads, so it should be quite interesting. It always is on the dad's trip.
Speaking of some language that might make you wash your mouth out with soap, should be a good time. Willie, safe travels, and have a good call tomorrow night.
I'll talk to you from Philly tomorrow.
Absolutely.
We will see you there. All right, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back into your phones. We'll hear from Mike Vrabel in just under 1 hour. But coming up next, there's a whole lot of talk because we're at this point in the NFL season of moving on from coaches, moving on from general managers, evaluations of the season, evaluations of rosters. There has been some evaluating that has been done. And I was shocked. I think you would be shocked by some of the lists of the failed evaluations. And rather, who's not on that list? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
Are you understanding that the full review will come at the end of the season? But yesterday there was some finality knowing you can't make the playoffs. When you went home last night or came in this morning, is there some, I guess, theme that you think about of why this season is where it is right now, earlier than you expected?
No. No, we're focused on, you know, I appreciate the question. I do. I just we're focused on what we have to do today, on who's injured and how they feel and how many guys are sick with the flu and all this other stuff. That's my focus, is not, you know, going back and, you know, and evaluating that right now.
No. Those are my favorite Mike Vrabel responses. When he says probably what he really wants to say and then backtracks a little bit with the coach speak, tries to, you know, soften the blow a little bit, but no.
The cat is out the bag. You already said it.
Yeah, you already said it. Can't take it back. That was Mike Vrabel kind of on a reflection on this season. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, D-Mace, and you made the point of, look, you gotta game prep for the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. Can't be doing all sorts of reflecting, but we can. And so can media members across the country reflect on not just this team, but the entire NFL and look at who passed the test, who didn't pass the test, whose seat has warmed up a little bit, whose seat is getting uncomfortably hot, and who has maybe taken the heat off of them. Mike Sando's most recent pick six, looking at the three coaching vacancies in the NFL, of course, Carolina, Vegas, and the Chargers.
Yes.
And looking at nine other teams that could potentially be facing some difficult decisions as far as the coaches are concerned. Nine teams. Mike Sando references the Saints, the Falcons, the Bucks, and NFC South that is brutal to watch this year. And those are all fair things to bring up. You know, Dennis Allen in New Orleans, that offense is horrendous.
Yes,
horrendous.
It's not good. Hadn't been good since Sean Payton left.
It hasn't been good since Drew Brees left.
Yes.
The Falcons, offense also is horrible. Arthur Smith is on the hot seat. Mm-hmm. Mentions Matt Eberflus in Chicago. Mentions Bill Belichick. Mentions the Steelers and Mike Tomlin. Mentions Mike Tomlin questioning his future in Pittsburgh. Nine potential coaching changes that could be made, or nine teams that might have to make a difficult decision or might need to do some serious introspection about their coaching staff. Nine. And not one reference to Mike Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans. Even though Mike Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans are 5-9, when they've lost 75% of their last games, going back to the seven-game losing streak last year. This team is awful. This team is bad. And really, with the pieces that they brought back, They have no business being as bad as they are. Do we expect them to be Super Bowl contenders? No. And we talked about that ad nauseum during training camp. This is not a Super Bowl contending team, but this is a team that could sneak into the playoffs, that could win the division. But they have no business being as bad as they are, and no mention of Mike Vrabel among nine coaches, including Bill Belichick and Mike Tomlin in this list. D-Mace, I don't know when the national love for Mike Vrabel is eventually going to start to dissipate. I don't know when the national media might look at the Tennessee Titans and how bad they are and say, my goodness, at some point we're going to have to start looking at that coach. But we're not there yet, and that is shocking to me.
Yeah, it is. But I've always said, listen, Mike Vrabel, Mike Vrabel doesn't have to worry, in a sense. Now, he doesn't have to worry as long as the narrative nationally is Vrabel is a great coach. Look at what he does. Because they already shaped the narrative. And we talked about this earlier in the week. They always shape the narrative when talking about Mike Vrabel. And listen, he's earned it, you know. Let's look at some of his notable wins throughout his career. You had the Titans and the Ravens, January 11th, 2020, in divisional round. They beat the Ravens 28-12. Wasn't that Lamar's MVP year?
That was 19.
So that was like, it was his, he won MVP, he was going to win MVP, but this is the next, it's the, still the same football year, but a different year.
Right.
So it's a 19-20 season. So they beat the Ravens 28-12 in Baltimore. They come back and they beat the Patriots in a divisional game 20-13. Basically, we saw the end of the dynasty in New England. Then, you know, another notable win. They were minus -5 against the Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs 35-32, November 10th, 2019. December 11th, the other 2 weeks ago. They were a 14-point dog. If you just look at the score, you would be like, wow.
Yeah.
Like 28-27 against that team.
In Miami, Monday Night Football.
Absolutely. Go back to 2018, 20-17 over the Texans. They were -3. The Texans were a good team then. They were not a great team. They were just coming into their own, meaning the Titans. So all, and then Buffalo, the Buffalo game. They beat Buffalo 42-16, 2020.
Again,
Buffalo,
Monday Night Football.
Absolutely. So we can go down a list of games. They went to L.A. and beat the Rams. You know,
without Derrick Henry.
Exactly, 28-16. So all of these wins that he has had where he was the underdog and it was no way they can win this game. And for some reason, the team pulls it out and they win. So now you're starting to build up this sort of your story is being built.
Yeah.
You know, as you're walking, your story is just being built up. So no matter what he does moving forward up until now, the narrative will always be Mike Vrabel will get it right. Don't worry about it. He will get it right. Just give him players. Well, last time I checked, didn't he have something to do with these players that they got now?
Yeah.
So he gave himself the players that they have now, and look at what they're doing. But there's always a built-in excuse for Mike Vrabel when it comes nationally. Now, locally, majority of us are going to call it like it is. Hey, we see it every day. We hear the press conferences. We see the players. So we call it a different way. Nationally, they're not looking at what we see week in and week out. They're looking at the big wins. They're looking at the roster, and they're saying, well, last week, he pulled out that hell of a win against the Miami Dolphins. Look at Vrabel.
Well, the week before, they got two punts blocked and lost in overtime to a divisional opponent. This week, he had a 13-0 lead against Case Keenum and a Houston Texans team that was missing essentially their entire roster, and you lost to that team. You blew a 13-0
lead. You're absolutely right, Caroline.
But that doesn't matter, apparently. I'm
listening to the broadcast, and I love the guys that, you know, that broadcast the Titans game, but I'm listening to it, from the standpoint of, let's see how they phrase this one. Let's see how they change the narrative on this one. Mm-hmm. And not one time did they ever allude to it being Mike Vrabel's fault. It's always the roster, the roster, the roster. Look at what when they're winning, look at what he's doing with this bad roster. Uh-huh. When they're losing, he has a bad roster. You know, you can't blame him for that. John Robinson, you can blame him for this. This is his roster.
This offensive line is not John Robinson.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying, until the narrative nationally changed, and thank God for him, it hasn't. Until the narrative for him nationally changed, he's going to be the Titans coach. As long as he keeps on pulling out these insurmountable victories, he'll be fine. He will be fine until it gets to a point where the national narratives will say, whoa, 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 whoa. Now, we've had enough of this. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not winning games you should be winning. Yeah, you beat the Dolphins. But what about the injured and decimated Houston Texans? You can't beat them? Mm-hmm. Seriously? They're going to keep on until they stop giving him built-in excuses. His job, I'm not going to say it's 100% safe, but why does he need to worry? Because Amy is – they're looking at nationally. What's the narrative of him nationally? What was said like a year ago? Don't let Mike Vrabel go because somebody else will pick him up.
Who cares?
Exactly. But nationally, that's the narrative on Mike Vrabel. And listen, I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it because he has. This team has beaten teams that they had no business beating with the talent that he and the last GM mm-hmm. helped acquire. So on one hand, you say, yeah. But I think from a national standpoint, on the other hand, they do not criticize him. Not. They do not criticize Mike Vrabel. Not one bit. Not at all. And I'm like, why is that? I'm not asking for y'all to just go out of y'all way to criticize him. But y'all criticize every other coach. Tomlin.
Mm-hmm.
Belichick. Sean Payton. You criticize all these other coaches.
Those coaches have won Super Bowls.
Exactly. You criticize all these other coaches, but the one coach that doesn't have the skins on the wall like those coaches do, it's like, nah, it's not his fault. It's not his fault.
It's always somebody else.
Because he's going to pull out a big victory against the Dolphins, which he did. And I credit him for it. I mean, he's a part of it. I credit him for, you know, getting his team ready to go. But if you look at that game against Miami, we know why that game was the way it was. One, Tim Kelly called a hell of a game.
Will Levis
played his ass off in the second half. Yeah, exactly. And then the Dolphins were without their MVP.
I give Mike Vrabel credit for the decision to go for two. And that's all I give him credit for that game.
Yes.
And I want to know, from the national media perspective, what has Mike Vrabel done to deserve the benefit of the doubt? I think everyone deserves a benefit of the doubt. Yeah. I think everyone deserves grace. Absolutely.
Coaching, if this was last year, included. Yes. Okay, give him grace.
But we have so much of a sample size mm-hmm. of this team being so bad. Mm-hmm. This team being so bad. And Mike Vrabel has a whole heck of a lot to do with it. That if we are now going to talk about Bill Belichick's time running out in New England, he won 6 Super Bowls mm-hmm. in New England. If anybody deserves benefit of the doubt, it's the guy who won 6 Super Bowls in his tenure in New England.
And been to 10 of them with that team.
10. Mike Vrabel hasn't been to a Super Bowl. He hasn't won a Super Bowl. Mike Vrabel hasn't won anything. Mm-hmm. I think Mike Vrabel's a good coach.
Yes, I do too.
But where's this benefit of the doubt coming from?
I have no idea where it's coming from. Again, we're not advocating for Vrabel to be fired because I do believe he's a good coach. But when does that stuff stop mattering? When does, you know, people start to, from a national standpoint, mm-hmm. I mean, start to hold his feet to the fire in regards to this? When do you do it? You didn't do it last year, and I get it why you didn't do it last year, but you didn't do it. You didn't do it this year. And here's the funny part about it. From a national narrative, they criticize players up and down. They still criticizing Lamar Jackson. Oh, I heard it this morning. he hadn't won a playoff game. He's only won one playoff game. The kid's been an MVP. He hadn't had the playmakers that some of these other quarterbacks have had. Mm-hmm. You know, he's basically trying to do it on his own with a offensive coordinator at the time that pretty much handcuffed him and made him an extension of the run game instead of developing him as a passer. But every time they talk about Lamar, he hadn't won a game in the playoff. Where's all that energy when talking about Mike Vrabel? Mm-hmm. Again, Vrabel's a good coach, but where's the energy? Like, this dude hadn't won a playoff game in 3 years, 4 years. When they had the number one seed, they, went to bed.
Tannehill threw that one.
Exactly.
Away.
So when does it get to a point again? I'm not asking them to go out of their way to criticize him. Mm-hmm. I would never do that. But when do you say, hey, what's going on in Tennessee? Is Mike Vrabel the coach we think he is or not? Let's dive into this a little bit more. And it shouldn't take the local guys here to really dive into it. The national guys, if you're following this team from a national standpoint, Rossini.
Yeah.
She needs to be writing about what's going on here instead of buttering him up every other time. Write about the things that are not happening.
Did you see what she wrote in the Athletic about the Miami game? Right. Vrabel and his game strategist and director of football administration had actually talked about the exact game situation the night before deciding to go for two against the Dolphins over a heavy steak dinner. Before dinner, they'd been reviewing some games around the league and zeroed in on a particular team in their division that didn't use this strategy after scoring to go down 8 points in the fourth quarter. While enjoying a tomahawk steak, they got into it and discussed their own strategy. It became the center of dinner conversation along with other staff members in Vrabel's family. This pivotal discussion couldn't have worked out for the better for the Titans because when the situation presented itself, the Titans knew exactly what they were calling.
Was she passing him the pepper, the crushed pepper and the salt? Was she passing it to him?
Pass the potatoes? Yeah.
Was she at the table?
She may have been.
See, stuff like that. Again, Diana's doing her job. I get it. When you are that close to the situation and, it is to believe that, whatever information comes out is coming from Vrabel when it comes out from her.
Right.
How much can you push or how much can you put his feet to the fire if you are so close to the individual?
And I think Diana is a great reporter.
Exactly.
But that is just one example of national media where there's skepticism placed on other coaches mm-hmm. or players, and that same accountability isn't put toward Mike Vrabel. And I just want to know why.
Exactly.
How many more games does Mike Vrabel have to lose for everyone else to wake up and realize, his teammate, very good. Mm-hmm. We'll get into your thoughts on this coming up next. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 1025, 1063 The Game. Hey, join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and D. Mace at Teddy's Tavern this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. for our NFL pregame show. He'll break down the Titans' Week 16 matchup against the Seahawks and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Beast Unleashed. Promise to our phones, and we are right to them. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, breaking down Mike Sando's most recent pick six, highlights nine coaches that could be on the hot seat. Mike Vrabel isn't one of them. How many more games does Mike Vrabel need to lose for the national media to stop the love fest for Mike Vrabel? Your thoughts on that? Chris Titans in Truth, my guy, is on the line. What's up, Chris?
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. And I got to, I'm going to make a point, and it's going to lead to a question. I agree with all of you. I agree with y'all. Mike Vrabel hasn't won a thing. I mean, everybody wants to talk about he's the greatest, he's the best coach the Titans have ever had. If I remember correctly, even though Jeff Fisher did a lot of 8-8s, didn't Jeff Fisher lead a team to a Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Hasn't he been to two AFC championships, winning one of them? Mike Vrabel has done that how many times? Zero. Yet Brandon Staley, who went, Mike Vrabel is 12-19 in the last 2 years, and everybody wants to say he's such a great coach. Brandon Staley, who just got fired, went 24-24 in 2.5 years, didn't have a losing season till this year. went 9-7, 9-8, 10-7. Got to the playoffs. He goes 5-9. That's not good enough. They got fired. So my question is this. If any other coach was in this exact same situation, not named Mike Vrabel, any coaches in this situation on this team or on any other team, wouldn't they be fired already or really on the hot seat? And I'll listen off air. Thank y'all.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Thank Appreciate you, Chris. Your call. I think the one difference between Brandon Staley and Mike Vrabel is the Chargers had their franchise quarterback. Yeah. They signed Justin Herbert to that massive extension. Mm-hmm. They had a loaded roster and were not winning enough games. Mm-hmm. The Titans don't have nearly as good of a roster as the Chargers do. Now, it doesn't excuse winning as many football games as they have, but to be fair, that is the biggest difference there.
Yeah, and Staley, who's supposed to be this defensive guy.
The defense is horrendous.
Yeah, that defense was horrendous. Now, listen, you got to give him a little credit too, Staley. You know, he deserves a bunch of the blame, but this is a guy that, you know, each year he's been coached, they've been decimated with injuries, like decimated with injuries. And to key roles, they lose at least one or two receivers every year for a significant amount of time. They always lose somebody on defense, a key player, for a significant amount of time. So if anybody had a built-in excuse, it would be Staley. But Staley's problem is you're supposed to be this defensive guy and your defense is horrible. You got your franchise quarterback, and he hasn't gotten better. He hasn't significantly gotten better. You know, he's getting better, but it's not to a point where you see some of these other young quarterbacks under different systems, you know, getting better and surpassing him. Right. There's no way, as much as I like Joe Burrow, that he should have passed up Justin Herbert so quickly. You see what I'm saying? Because to me, that Charger team was always a team in a position to win.
Yeah.
You look at every position, they're in a position to win. Skill guys, they got them. Defensive guys, they got them. But for some reason, they can't put it together, so it all falls on the coach. But on the flip side, you look at Vrabel, and it's like, dude, I know you don't have your franchise quarterback, but you got you a good quarterback. You got you a franchise running back. Mm-hmm. You know, you haven't been able to recapture that thing that y'all had in 2018 or 19 when they went to the AFC Championship game. You haven't been able to recapture that. If that was a player doing what Vrabel did, a quarterback doing what Vrabel did, they would be saying, we may need to make a change. The national narrative would be, they may need to make a change. Because that quarterback hadn't won since, as they do Lamar Jackson, since this. And they do a lot of franchise quarterback. They do Josh Allen that, even though I don't believe Josh Allen is an elite quarterback in my eyes. He's a good quarterback, really good one, but he's not elite like some of the other guys. Even with him, they criticize Josh Allen, and rightfully so.
What has Josh Allen won?
Absolutely. So I'm really trying to figure this out, like we all are on this show. What is the deal with Vrabel in the national media?
To Chris's point, 12-19, going back to the 7-game losing streak last year.
Mm-hmm.
If that's in Philadelphia.
Oh, he's gone.
Kansas City.
He's gone.
Pittsburgh.
Gone.
New York, maybe not. Some bad football in New York.
Yeah.
Any other, you know,
but
major,
he would be on the hot seat.
He would absolutely be on the hot seat. That would be a topic of conversation on SportsCenter. Mm-hmm. That coach would be listed in these coaches on the hot seat or listed amongst coaches that could be, you know, whose job securities could be in question. Why is it different here? Why is the standard different with the Titans?
Oh, man, that's what we're trying to figure out.
It shouldn't be.
Sometimes the job that you take may shield you from a lot of criticism. And the job that he took with the Titans, and he had some early success, but it has shielded him from a lot of criticism. It has. If he's anywhere else, he's getting criticized. His tail is on the hot seat.
Mm-hmm.
But in this market, we're going to criticize him and we're going to hold his feet to the fire, but we're also going to say, hey, when he does a great job, we're going to say he does a great job. But he's in a safe place.
He shouldn't be.
He shouldn't be.
We'll get Jonathan Hutton's thoughts on that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays, 1025, 1063 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.